Yep. Okay. Great. We're going to get Mahal to be the host eventually, but I'm Sarah Brenham, the director of the Utah State Office of Rehabilitation, but I represent the executive director of the Department of Workforce Services on the committee. And we have made a little bit of a change in supporting the committee. Dee has been helping us for the last, I don't know, 6 to 9 months that I've been on the committee or commission, and Mahal is actually going to be taking over primary staffing responsibility. Mahal, wave. I'll let you introduce yourself a little bit too. Mahal, I don't even know why. I think Mahal does some part-time support for me, and she's the staff of the State Workforce Development Board. And I don't dare say some of her time freed up. She probably just has time to do what her actual job is now, but we asked her if she could also help support this commission. So Dee is helping her transition in, and Mahal will be taking primary responsibility for this. So you'll see her name a lot in emails coming out to the committee. So just thank you, Dee, so much for all your support over the last period of time, and welcome to Mahal. Mahal, do you want to say a few words about yourself? Put you on the spot.
Hello, everyone. It's nice to meet you. Again, my name is Mahal, like Taj Mahal. I'm new, kind of new to Utah. I'm a California transplant, so I just got here. I think I moved here in 2018, and so that's when I started my job with the state of Utah. I do work with Sarah and Dee, and I support a few other directors at the Department of Workforce Services, as well as the State Workforce Development Board, but I was really excited to hear that you needed some admin support. I think this is going to be a really great opportunity for me, and it's just nice to work with so many established women in Utah. So, thank you.
Thanks, Mahal.
So we can now go to Karen. Karen, do you want to introduce yourself, and we'll go from there?
Sure. My name is Karen Leonardi. I've served on the commission for a few years. I was with Select Health, and so I represented large businesses over 500. And during the pandemic, I just decided to make a radical career change. And I am now at Weber State University, and I am the development director of the College of Health Professions. So I work with 10 different divisions. All healthcare related, so similar to what I was doing, but really not. So, and that all happened during the pandemic, so lots of changes. So that's who I am.
Thank you, Commissioner Leonardi, and I guess congratulations on the shift. Yes. You're still in a big employer, so that meets criteria for our purpose, and we love to continue to have you and all your expertise, so thanks for that. We have Senator Milner. Do you want to introduce yourself?
So I just want to say I'm really glad Karen's not only here but at Weber State. So known her for many, many years, and lots of different, both of us lots of different roles. So I represent Senate District 18, which has parts of Weber, Davis, and Morgan counties, and so it gives me a really good perspective on kind of very different counties with very different needs.
Great. Thank you, Senator Milner. Anna Marie, you're next.
Yes,
it's Anna Marie, and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
My cousin's name is Anna Marie, so I always call Anna Marie. So apologies.
I'm Anna Marie Wallace. I'm the state director of the Women's Business Center of Utah. It's an entrepreneurial center that is statewide, helping business owners. So it's nice to meet you, Mahal.
Yeah.
Oh, I should probably mention, I represent small business, 50 employees or under on the commission.
Thank you. Representative White, Commissioner, we're ready for you.
Yeah, it's a matter of timing and getting to that microphone click. I'm Elizabeth Waite. I represent in House District 31, which is the north area of West Valley City. But I'm also a Utah native from rural Utah, so I strive to understand what the economic picture is among particularly women in the rural parts of the state as well, just because I spent a lot of time there growing up, and it's important to me. Thank you. Glad to see everybody.
Thank you, Representative Wade. Okay, we have our co-chair, Melissa. We're doing introductions, so you're next. You're muted, so we might have to unmute you.
Of course, of course. I was just lucky to not have my mask on. And sorry, it's been a crazy day already. I'm Melissa Freegang. I am the director of the Weber Prosperity Center of Excellence, and it is an interagency agreement between our Weber County Commission, our Weber Morgan Health Department, and Weber Human Services, so our public behavioral health. And I am the co-chair with Senator Escamilla, and just happy to have you all here. And a big welcome to Mahal.
Thank you, co-chair. So now we have Commissioner Burnett. We're ready for you.
Thank you very much. I went to the dermatologist. Look at that, just to me. So I am retired after working over 49 years in the labor movement, working with the men and women who work construction. And then I'm also the executive director of Utah Women in the Trades. And what we do is promote women to consider the non-traditional career. And we have apprenticeship programs in schools. So I am very excited to continue my experience with the Economy Commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Burnett. I see, is it Bethany Hyatt? I want to make sure I'm not killing that name, but do you want to introduce yourself, Bethany?
Sure. I am the public information officer that supports workforce services in the communication needs that this commission may have. Okay. So any media or things, I'm just a support. I help.
Great. Well, thank you. Welcome to our commission. And I think I lost one person that was there, but Kate. Well, I think these are all of our participants for the meeting to begin with. So I'll now pass the time to my co-chair. And Melissa, take it away.
Great. Yeah. And the person who dropped off was Dee. So,
Melissa? Okay, got it.
Yes. Sarah, go ahead.
Quick point of clarification. There's a Jill DeVito on the line. I'm not sure who that is.
That is the name under me. I'm logged in.
Okay. Just checking.
Sorry. That yeah, I okay. I have like three different Zoom accounts within our department. I happen to be logged into this one, so I apologize. Okay.
But, no problem. Yeah. I just want to make sure we got the minutes right. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll try to eventually change that name here shortly. But on the agenda, so next on the agenda, in terms of just opening business, first, I just want to read the purpose of the Women in the Economy Commission. And our purpose is to increase public and government understanding of the current and future impact and needs of the state's women in the economy and how those needs may be best, maybe most effectively and efficiently met. B, identify and recommend implementation of specific policies, procedures, and programs to respond to the rights, needs, and impact of women in the economy. And C, facilitate coordination of the functions of public and private entities concerned with women in the economy. So that is our purpose. And for those of you who were involved in our strategic planning session, we wanted to and will continue to read the purpose so that we can level set at the beginning of each meeting and really make sure that we stay to our true north. And then I just wanted to go over the roster really quickly. And obviously we had welcome and introductions. We do have a couple of vacant positions. We did decide later on that when actually, we didn't decide. The legislature decided, it's in the bill, actually, that when you have someone who is resigning or leaving their position on the Women in the Economy position, they can fill that vacancy, continue to fill it until we have someone through the nomination process and appointed. So currently, we have Karen, who is changed positions, and so you know, we probably at some point, not today because not on the agenda, need to talk about a large business representative. And if Karen can remain as that individual, she is definitely willing, but we should probably have that conversation. We have Jennifer Robinson from the Kempsey Gardner Institute. She has resigned, and so we do need nominations to fill that position. And that position represents, it's an individual who has experience in demographic work and is employed by a state institution of higher education. And so what I'd like to do is offline, if you wouldn't mind, if you have any ideas of nominees, I would love for you to send that to me, and then I'll meet with Senator Escamilla, and we'll talk through how we want to put this on the agenda and talk about it next. We have a vacant position, which is one individual from a nonprofit organization that addresses issues related to domestic violence. We do have a nominee in queue. We've talked about her. And there's a new process for nomination that Commissioner Brenna is overseeing. So we do have an individual that is working towards that. So I think that vacancy should be filled very quickly. And then as Commissioner Barnett mentioned, she resigned from the Women in the Economy Commission, but given the definition and her role still active in labor, she has agreed to remain on the Women in the Economy Commission. And so that is no longer vacant. She will be a permanent member there until she decides to remove herself. And then just to reiterate, we have three subcommittees. And so our three subcommittees, we have a policy subcommittee that is chaired by Representative Waite. We have a communications subcommittee that Commissioner Barnett has agreed to chair. So super happy about that. And we have a research subcommittee. And typically the researcher, because that position is vacant, I think that subcommittee will continue to be vacant until we get someone in that role. So we'll leave that subcommittee for now. The expectation is that the subcommittees meet in the off months. So the Women in the Economy Commission meets every other month. And so the subcommittees, if they'll start to meet in between in the off months and then report out, we'll start having them back on the standing agenda. So that's where we're at with the membership, Commissioner Escamilla.
Great. Thank you for that, Co-Chair. And those are really good news. I mean, I think we were feeling a little bit empty not that long ago, and it seems like it's coming back together. I also think the fact that we're seeing some light at the end of the tunnel with vaccination and our decrease on COVID cases, we may see more movement here. So now I'm going to we need to do approval of the minutes for the January 27th meeting. I know it was emailed twice already, at least, by our staff support. I don't know if I have a motion to move the minutes. And, of course, that meeting was during the legislative session, and that was when we had a variety of legislators presenting on their priority bills, which was very enlightening, and it was a great meeting. So if anyone, I don't know if there's any changes, or we do have a motion by Sarah. Sarah moves to approve the minutes. And do we have a second? Okay, Co-Chair Melissa. And then if that's okay, then I see everyone in approval, please say aye or raise your little hand, your thumbs up.
Perfect. Aye.
Thank you. So that's approved with unanimous support on those minutes. If there's anything at this point of other public input, but I will now pass the time to our co-chair, Melissa, if you want to go over what took place and how we had a great meeting, but you probably were having a really good experience through that process. And I'll pass the time to you to talk more about that and what were some of those bills and legislation that certainly were directly impacting women in the economy.
Yeah, so, and I'd love to facilitate the conversation and certainly have the members who were present speak up as well. So just to talk about the process, what we did this year was we had Senator Escamilla sent out a letter to all of the legislators, inviting them to submit their upcoming legislation if they thought it was important and they wanted this body, given our representation, to weigh in or to provide them input on their upcoming bills. And so our Women in the Economy Commission We are tasked or required to have a meeting during the session. And so I think thank you, Sarah, very much for helping us coordinate it early in the session before the legislators really got, you know, super busy. And we had 10 legislators present, which was the largest number of legislators that we've had in the past 2 years since we've been doing this. So I think that process of having a legislator send out the invitation probably was a good change. And so I think it was in, I think, the format, and it was using a communication mechanism that I think legislators are very used to. And so I was really pleased to see that level of participation. And we held it via Zoom. We did add some social media. So thank you, Anne-Marie, for setting up a Facebook site and helping us Zoom straight to Facebook. And a big thank you to Kennedy, Senator Escamilla's I don't know what she is technically in terms of title, but
in our Senate Minority Office.
Yeah, I didn't want to give her the wrong title, but she, you know, she was just outstanding. We had the meeting, and I would like to, after I just finished the process piece, would love your feedback on it. But essentially, what we did is we followed up with a press release, and we didn't have any inquiries, but felt like that was a really nice way to follow through on the Women in the Economy Commission. And I think a nice way to kick off some of our Women Speak Up events as we talk about that into the future. And so I would recommend we do that same thing. I think, you know, potentially even earlier, although I think the timing of it was probably just right as well. And so I, you know, I'm really, really pleased with how it went. And with that, I will definitely open it up to other feedback. I would love to hear what everybody thought of the process, if they have any feedback, ways to improve. And then I would love to hear just your thoughts about the meeting itself and the presentations that the legislature provided, some of the bills that you might have thought were interesting or concerning or so I'll just open the floor up and would love to hear your perspective. And don't all jump at it at once. I mean,
this is going to say one at a time, people. We can do this in an orderly fashion.
Is it okay? Okay. I was really impressed with how organized it was, how well it went on Zoom, and how enthusiastic all of the presentations came off. I really felt like people were excited to have the time and to bring their information forward. So I was really impressed with how it went. I've been through some of the other sessions before, and I just felt like even though it was all virtual, it really, really went well in my mind. So,
thank you. And Senator Milner, we just by way of sharing with you, essentially what the Women in the Economy Commission does is we don't necessarily give our approval or disapproval or anything like that. With the way the Women in the Commission Economy Commission is put together, we have great representation, as you see, from business and labor. And so what we do is just provide feedback, thoughts, concerns, just things for legislators to think about as they're moving bills forward. And then we do either approve in concept or not. So it's more conceptual, and so it's not, we're not a governing body by any stretch of the imagination. So we just want to provide legislators a chance to hear from a robust, different representation of a group.
Maybe, Melissa, I would like just to add, I think the timing, you're absolutely right, the timing was almost perfect. There's nothing perfect on timing in the legislature, right? I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. But it's, a lot of people do not understand that for legislators, it's hard sometimes to talk about bills when you're not fully prepared to fully disclose or you're working some of the details. People want to see that, you know, well, we want to see the draft. And I don't even have a draft sometimes. I just have an idea. So you can't do it too far because into the session, because by that time it's hard and sometimes it's late and it's hard to, you know, manage scheduling. But then when you do it too early, so like prior to the session, even if you have some ideas, your bills sometimes are still in drafting process and you're still trying to, you know, talk to stakeholders. So it is one of those tricky things. And I don't know that there's a solution to that. It's just the nature, again, of the session. But I think the timing was good. A lot of people had bills already drafted. So I think we should continue to look into that timeline of a week to 2 weeks from when the session starts, right? The legislators felt good. It's one of those where we couldn't do it in person. So we were getting used to this all Zoom interactions during the session, which end up being most of our interactions, but we're not used to that. I mean, we're used to like in-person moving fast and zooming in and out of meetings. You know, we were just talking about, it was just odd, bizarro, and certainly brought a lot of access for the public, but for legislators, it was like, man, stretching it thin on, you were doing three Zooms in an hour, jumping from one to another. So maybe next year will be a little bit different if we go back to more in-person, still allow the public to interact in virtual process, but for the legislators to be in person, I think it makes a big difference, and also have that ability to do online as well. But I think we got great responses. A lot of those bills passed, which is exciting.
Right.
Calling some of them. Others didn't, but we had some interesting bills on issues related to safety, especially for women. A lot of the, you know, police reform, childcare, you know, the big housing with the $50 million appropriations was huge. So yeah, some good stuff, but I think for, you know, and I'm sure my colleagues have their perspective too, but I think it worked really well. So the timing was good.
Yeah, and I have the list up. So Representative Matthews did an affordable child care. Representative Jennifer Daly Provost did unemployment insurance for small business and digital opportunity access amendments. Senator Escamilla did SB 19, expanded infertility treatment coverage pilot. SB 41, mental health access, food security. Representative Dan Johnson did appropriations for violence abuse centers and family support centers. Representative Karen Kwan presented by Representative Waite, HB 31, automated vehicles. Representative Cheryl Acton did HB 77, aviation liability, and HB 2019, inmate phone rate cap. And then Senator Wyler did workplace violence mitigation. And Senator Janie Iwamoto did domestic violence amendments place, and then name modifications and campus safety. So there were a few others that joined us late, but that was the list going into, you know, a week in advance.
And you know what? And I'll just add this, because Senator Bramble did give some feedback to me about the request. And, you know, just as a side note, I believe Senator Bramble was a sponsor of the Women in the Economy Commission, the original sponsor of the bill. So he actually made a little smart remark, which, if you know Senator Bramble, it's within that, his framework. So, you know, it's being himself. But he said, you know, I mean, like, every single bill we do here impacts women and, you know, in the economy. And I said, yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. And true. I mean, but there's certain pieces of legislation that we know are impacting in a different way women. So I kind of like gave him a little bit of that framework again. And I told him, I said, hey, you remember you were the one that sponsored that bill? He's like, oh, no, I love it. I love, you know, he's been a huge supporter of the commission. But he just came, he's like, I didn't know what to do. Like, my 20 bills that I'm doing or 40 bills are all impacting women. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I get it. So anyways, just I wanted to share that with the group. But yeah, he made that remark out of the email that we sent.
Yeah.
I think Commissioner Barnett had a comment.
I don't know. I guess I raised my hand or do my, this is a bad side. I should do the other side. This is a really bad side. Look at that. I really appreciated this on Zoom. I mean, I've been doing the, up on the legislature for so many years, and I really did like the Zoom, I have to tell you, and I enjoyed getting to know the various new commissioners coming online and the new legislators, and I'm excited about everything that we did. But you know, I was just going to say, I do love Curtis Bramble and personally have a relationship with him, and he spoke like a true male about our women's issues, so he can't fault him there, I guess. Anyway, so thank you.
Well, just to wrap up, we were unanimous in with abstention from Commissioner Brenna. We did approve all of these in concept. And so, and I did receive feedback from two of the legislators that they really appreciated being able to present their bills and, you know, as a first time sort of sharing it in public, getting feedback, but really able to even just practice, if you will, presenting the bill and how to outline it. And so I did receive positive feedback from the participants as well. So any other comments or feedback from anyone? Yes, Commissioner Brenna.
I just wanted to add, I think next year, if we could make a note, I don't think it would be difficult to do like a tracking sheet for the bills. I think this year we just didn't think about it, and it would just require maybe people to be designated or assigned to kind of keep us posted. Once we have the bills, we could easily do updates. You know, I don't know if that's valuable or not. You can track a lot of these bills on your own if they're of interest to you. So maybe that's just a discussion we have going into the event next year.
Yeah, and I think, Representative Waite, do you want to comment on that as the subcommittee, policy subcommittee chair? I really think that, you know, that's maybe a subcommittee thing that could happen. Obviously, maybe not during the session for Representative Waite, but maybe Representative Waite, I could support you in that. But if I'm actually thinking even some of the bills that we see over time, it would be great if the subcommittee could talk about some of those bills and, you know, maybe take that on as some of the agenda items during the year.
I agree. And even, for example, at this meeting, it would be really great to just report on what ended up with each of the bills that we talked about and the appropriations, because those appropriations ended up being as big of items this year as the bills did. They were really notable appropriations, and there was a lot more discussion in among the legislators, I think, about appropriations. But when you mentioned going on through the year, because some of the bills that didn't get completed in the process, they'll still continue. So they'll still be topics for conversation through the rest of this year into next session and in through interim. So that's a great idea. And this year I did have an intern who could have probably worked on that or teamed with another intern or coordinated with workforce service staff.
Yeah.
So yeah. Thanks for that idea.
Yeah, you bet. And I can, let's stay connected on that. I can work with the Hinckley Institute to also have an intern working with the policy subcommittee, you know, at the beginning of the semester. So you can have a couple of weeks with her and then, or him. It's just been hers all the past couple of times. So I can help connect a Hinckley Institute intern who can then help us liaison too, in terms of I can still run the process on your guys' behalf, just given that you're so busy. But then we can have someone who does the legislative follow-up and the tracking and emailing the group of where all of these are. So, great. Okay. Yes, Commissioner Barnett.
So I think you'll remember that during this our meeting back in January that I volunteered to do a tracking sheet because that's what I do. And I think under the communications with working with an intern as well, that's something maybe you should think about, because it is communicating to all of you the various bills that you want to be tracked, and then at the end where they ended up. So, and then, so, I mean, I don't know if it's under communications, but it seems like it's a communication thing, as well as these are policies. So. So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And so, you know, I serve on each subcommittee and maybe I can help link and liaise on that. So I think there's definitely different roles, but I think linking that makes a ton of sense.
Okay.
Yes, Commissioner Brenna.
One suggestion too. I think you sent me a bunch of information, Melissa, on how the website was updated, and I don't think we're talking about it at length today, but Mahal did look through that information, and we do, I think it'd be fairly simple to provide some updates. I don't know about responsiveness and timeliness, but we can explore that over this next couple months and try to get our website a little bit more up to date, and Mahal can do some of that for us. So
yeah, and that's a really great point, and I'll be meeting with Judy to help her get the subcommittee up and moving, and then of course you and I and Mahal will be meeting just on what is it that Mahal feels comfortable doing, and so that I can figure out where we need to insert some interns or with different people and expectations and roles. And so I think that's a great suggestion as well, and hopefully we can have what's the euphemism, the mini hands create a lighter load. So that'll be fantastic. So thank you. So with that, Commissioner Senator Escamilla, we are, I think, closing that part of the agenda, unless anyone else has any last minute questions or suggestions or comments. Okay, great.
Give me a minute. Yeah, sorry. Someone just walked into my office from work. Okay, well, thank you so much for that work. And Melissa, thank you. You've been running this program, and I appreciate your commitment and time. I know for legislators it gets extremely chaotic, and thank you for making it happen and for getting that press release out, which, it sounded like a very easy task, but of course it's never that simple. So, it's nice to have also Bethany here at hand and the staff of DWS to support us with this. I know we were waiting for Dr. Madsen, Susan Madsen, so she's not here yet, so I'm just going to jump into Anne Marie's presentation in terms of the Women Speak Up, what's the planning and next steps, and that's what we're going to be working before our next meeting. So, Anne Marie, the time is yours. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, I've agreed to be the chair of the Women Speak Up listening sessions, and so we have planned to do two more out of the three that we have planned. We split up the state three ways, northern, southern, and eastern, and then Wasatch Front. So the first two are excluding the Wasatch Front, listening to women share what it's like to be a woman in the state of Utah right now as it impacts the economy, which is in almost every way. Our first session was not too long ago, and we did hear mainly from business owners. I mean, since I serve business owners, I loved it, but we definitely want to have a variety of women and focuses. So one thing that came out of that particularly was that women are not being taken seriously as business owners. And so at least our organization put out an op-ed about at-home women, or excuse me, home-based businesses being taken seriously. But for this next one, we will be hosting the next listening session at our May meeting, which is May 25th. And we'll be marketing that. And I will be reaching out to Susan Manson to get the information to all the women's organizations throughout the state to invite them to the session. We just need to clarify if it's the beginning of our two-hour block or if it's going to be halfway through so that women can join when we're going to start that session. But I think it's been really great, really great. We'll make sure that they have an opportunity to fill out the survey that we put together as well. And we'd like them to do that ahead of time so that we can actually discuss what the outcome of any information we've learned from it. But that's what the plan is. The Wasatch Front will be after that. We haven't decided on that date, but it could be the following meeting or one after that. So, any questions about the listening sessions?
Sorry, so which group are we targeting at the May meeting?
Southern and Eastern Utah.
Southern and Eastern.
Southern and Eastern. We've done Northern, which included Vernal, and excluding the Wasatch Front, this next one will be Southern and Eastern Utah, and then the final one will be Wasatch Front, the four counties, Utah, Salt Lake, Davis, and Weber.
One of the things I'm wondering is, too, with the survey, we didn't have a whole lot of response, and part of that was probably last minute, but we have a a decent survey that we could, if we still want to use that, I think we just need some creative ideas of how to get that out there. So maybe that's something you guys can talk about. But we have it. We can share it. We can get a link out to whoever you want us to get it out to and get a little more.
It sounds like, you know, Dr. Susan Madsen will be joining us on this meeting not too long. She might be the perfect person to ask if she'll support that in recommending that women's organizations send it out to their women and also encourage them to complete it. And maybe we don't, I don't know, I think it's important to tie it to the listening session, but also needs to stand on its own, you know? I mean, you could have a lot more women participate in that who may not be available at the exact time or date of the listening session, but they absolutely could take a minute over a two-week period to fill it out. So I hope to work on that as well. Yes, Anne.
I think that's a great idea. There are lots of groups out there, and I know Dr. Susan Madsen has connections with a lot, but I mean, I'm thinking about lots of chamber organizations that have women's groups. I mean, there are lots of different women's groups that we could get some really good feedback from. And I think that would be extremely helpful, and the greater the voice, the better.
And the more accurate we know what the true circumstances are. One thing I am just thinking about as well, although we did the northern area first and asked them to do the survey, I'm wondering if we could just promote the survey statewide, you know, get as many responses as we can. I believe one of the questions is one of the questions the county there?
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Yeah, so, we have a drop down for the county. So, yeah, that would make tons of sense.
I don't think I may not tie it directly to the listening sessions so that we can get that statewide and have one deadline for everyone and then continue to move on with our listening sessions.
That's great. And I also, we didn't have a huge number of responses the first time around, but the responses that we did get were, I think, people sending it out on social, members of the Women in the Economy Commission sending it out. And so I think the word of mouth is important, whether it's a tweet or another Facebook. That was really helpful last time when we did send the survey out. So, and I think Senator Milner, to your point, chambers, and, you know, the chamber's going to pick it up a lot quicker and distribute it if it's coming from you than from me. So, you know, I think any and all is helpful for sure, especially with this group. So that was really meaningful last time.
Well, like the Salt Lake Chamber, I think, has connections with all the chambers just to make it easy. We'd be able to say, you know, because there's a statewide chamber group. We could contact them, suggest that they distribute it, and then share the results with them, because I think they'll all be interested, and that's what you want. So it would be an opportunity for them to be able to more broadly hear from membership and others, and I think it would be a real plus for everybody.
I'll probably reach out to Judy as well, you know, to tie in communications for sure, so that we can get that out. And I will reach out to the Utah Chamber Association, the statewide. They're led by my coworkers, so it's pretty easy for me to talk with them. And I think, like I said, I think Dr. Susan Madsen is going to be one of the best connections too. So maybe we'll add a tagline onto that one, because the listening session is Women Speak Up. Maybe we add on Be Heard, or I don't know, Share, or something like that. Any other suggestions? These are great.
Are we doing it electronically again?
I think we should.
Yes.
The WebEx meeting was...
The listening session. Sorry, I thought you meant the survey.
The speak up event. I think that Mahal got some feedback from Kennedy that the WebEx is really kind of a monster to navigate. So maybe you can include Mahal in some conversations about what platform might work best.
Yeah, I have some recommendations. It absolutely needs to be virtual so we can involve all the counties possible. But I don't know if Mahal. Oh, there you go. Mahal, I would love to talk with you about the logistics of the actual listening session. That would be great.
The one downside I've noticed with Zoom is trying to do in-person meetings and a Zoom meeting is really complicated. So yes. But we're thinking May would just be virtual, right? We're too early. Okay, great.
Yeah, and the other piece of that is whatever platform we decided to use, the hard part was making sure that we had control over the actual members of the Women in the Economy Commission, and then, you know, control over the public and being able to mute them. And, you know, so whatever you guys decide, that was a big factor. And Commissioner Leonard had your hand up.
Oh, yes.
I did. There's one other source of women that I think that we could tap into, and that is through Pat Jones, and she's leading the Women in Leadership and both the political class, and I went through the leadership class 2 years ago. That's a phenomenally fast-growing group, and so that would be, you know, non-chamber-related, but every business that you can imagine is engaged in that. So I know Nicole really well. You probably do, too. I mean, if we could get the survey out to them, that would cross a lot of desks or emails.
You know, Anne-Marie, I don't know if this might be too difficult, but, that just made me think Silicon Slopes and UAMI and Utah Manufacturing Association and – you know, I just started thinking all the associations, especially some of those non-traditional, you know, quote unquote, organizations that would absolutely have distribution lists. That would be pretty helpful too, I would imagine.
Great. I've been furiously typing all these suggestions. Great. If you have any others, let me know. Just send me a quick email and I'll be able to reach out to them. When do we want the deadline to be for the survey? Do we do it the day before, or the Friday before the next listening session?
Well, I'm thinking if we're going to reach back out to the northern counties and have the survey out there, I'm not sure we need a deadline, unless you want to communicate if you want to be heard by this next date, and we do want to publicize the public coming to the Women in the Economy Commission, because we would love participation to hear from them directly. So I don't know if we would have a deadline per se on the survey itself, but perhaps we would have it before the next meeting if people wanted, you know, their comments and feedback to be counted in that particular one. But maybe we can talk about both Speak Up events, and then you're kind of promoting both events at the same time.
Yeah, that's true, because we won't have the Wasatch Front listening session until a little bit later. My thought was that for the surveys we send out to our clients, people will take the amount of time you give them. If you give them no time, they will take no time. So, we'll do some messaging around, be heard by the state, fill it out by then, but maybe that's not a hard deadline for them. That's a great idea. Great. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Thanks, Anne-Marie, for your work. And remember, this is our opportunity to gather data from women and from our state. And, I the bigger our universe of respondents, the better. I mean, we'll be actually statistically significant and valuable. If it's not statistically significant, it becomes more of a qualitative approach, but we do want that quantitative part. So let's get more responses. And Anne-Marie, if you have struggles with whether it's Silicon Slopes or the Manufacturers Association, I will be meeting with Todd Bingham next week. So I'll remind him, and that you'll be hearing from someone in the Women in the Common Commission. And with Clint Bates, we can do the same. So just let me know.
Okay, thank you.
Great. I know, are we still expecting Dr. Mattson? Is that the Sarah says yes?
She couldn't come until 3.
Oh, okay. So we still
have... Yeah, she's finishing a presentation, so...
Okay, so we are expecting Dr. Mattson, and she will have a presentation. Is there anything else that we want to discuss at this point?
Mahal has a couple questions that have come in. Do you want to talk about that, Mahal?
So I have a resource request from someone named Sylvester of Fingerprint for Success. They were looking over the Women in the Economy Commission website and asked if we would consider posting this report that they recently published, 18 Women in the Workplace Statistics That You Need to Know, The link is provided there for the online version. And I know we talked about maybe discussing what that process would look like for getting updates made and posting resources on the websites. But I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
One thing I wasn't sure of is whether that was like a commercial, like an advertisement, or, you know, I wasn't exactly sure what they were wanting. And, you know, if our policy is probably to stay neutral, do we want to entertain that? Or, you know, what did anyone have a chance to look at that information? How are you seeing it? Is that how you're interpreting it? Or it was on the, I think you sent the attachment, Mahal, right, on the appointment?
I wouldn't mind, Commissioner Brenna, just not necessarily responding specifically to the request, but maybe bring in a history of the original website and the design. And I know Anne-Marie was the chair of the communications when the website was built. So, you know, if memory serves, yes, we are relatively neutral. We didn't want to, because we don't make our own changes, and we work with, the group that does it for free. We designed it to be relatively static. And my concern overall, just as we're starting to do these, I have two sort of thoughts. One is that I think these would be things that maybe the subcommittee, now that it's up and moving again, should probably tackle. But from a historical standpoint, you know, you start to open up Pandora's box, and then you start to decide what to put on there and what not, and then you have to update and, you know, and then potentially take things down. And so I think historically we have said, look, we're all busy women. We don't control our own destiny there. Like, we can't just put things up and down. We don't know the timing of that. And so we designed it to be relatively static. With that said, I'm not opposed to addressing that or having that conversation again, whether it's in the subcommittee or even as this broader group. I mean, the commission has changed membership, you know, two times over. So we certainly can have that conversation with the new membership. But I just wanted to throw that history out there.
So what my thought is a report like this, and a report that's from a reputable source, I think should be on our social media. And maybe we decide if the website should have that type of data on it, or if it's only state reports or legislation and our you know, our support and concept. But this is the kind of stuff we should share on social media, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, not this one, like any that come up that are new, we should say something about or take a look at this.
So I'd love the communications committee to take these, because Mahal is getting emailed by them repeatedly, you know, kind of put our stuff out there. And I don't know that she doesn't want to have to decide what's appropriate for that or not. So that's good. And we'll do whatever the commission would like to do. So
I would say, from a practical standpoint, if Mahal, when you get those things, if you can send them to Judy and CC me on it, then we can kind of circle the wagons and until the subcommittee is up and moving. And then Anne-Marie, for a while, we may, you know, until you sort of hand over the social media and the Facebook, we may include you in that for, you know, for posting and stuff. But for now, let's maybe follow that process.
Okay.
Representative White.
I would like the whole commission to understand at some point what the policy would be on that. So what the criteria for posting here or not. Because one of the thoughts that I have about the website is, if we're going to have a page that says resources and it is static with only two, I think, items right now, then that looks like it's unattended to, instead of what we're calling static looks like it's not updated. So, but I haven't known what any policies are for our considering any of that. Was the question that I had when I saw that email come through. So whatever the communication subcommittee is talking about, I think would be good to come back to the full commission for us to at least be aware of, so we understand what they're using as guidelines.
Right.
Maybe what we do is have the committee come back for next meeting to make a decision, a recommendation on a policy. because we certainly don't have a policy. We need a policy. And to respond, because whoever is getting, you know, Mohammed, if you're getting those requests, you need to have a written response saying, you know, the commission will consider your request, but it may take time for you to hear back from the co-chairs or something. And, you know, at this point, just so they can stop bothering you, yeah. Right? But let's have a policy be recommended by the communications committee on our next meeting. Yeah, and the way we can approve that or not, I mean, how we want to handle that.
And include my email.
Yeah, you can, if you can send it to them, and that way we handle that, or, you know, in this case, Commissioner Barnett or Commissioner Framing. I mean, I just want, A, take it away from the staff that have no decision making, but B, we do need a policy. And we need to be careful with the policy, right? Because it's, I mean, I don't know if our higher education institutions, you know, reports are different versus a for-profit company's reports, right? I mean, certainly they should not, and they're not considered the same. So we need to set some guidelines, and it doesn't mean that they're bad. I mean, they may actually be good. I mean, we want to share that, but we need to make sure we know what those guidelines are and make it, and even put it in our website when we create that policy.
And then a process within that policy. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. One little sort of side note, the subcommittees can be comprised of individuals who are from the public. They don't have to be all Women in the Economy Commission members, but I did want to, since we have just a little bit of time, if anyone who's currently serving on the Women in the Economy Commission would like to be on the communications subcommittee or eventually on the research subcommittee or on the policy subcommittee, it would be great, I think, for the subcommittee chairs to know. So if you wouldn't mind either sending an email or raising your hand now, if there's a subcommittee that you would like to serve on, that would be fantastic. And you can send it later if you want. Or if you have recommendation from you know, public individuals that you think would be good on the committees, I'm sure the subcommittee chairs would welcome that as well.
I'm just looking to make sure I don't have a request from Susan that I missed, so I think we're good.
So not that I mind silences, but not only silences. Could I ask Senator Wilder, I'm quite curious what your thoughts are so far. It's your first meeting, and, you know, just to fill the, not to just fill the silence, but I am curious your thoughts and sort of gut level reactions to the first meeting of the Women in the Economy Commission that you were able to join us.
So, well, I think I'm just learning right now, so I don't, I learned a long time ago that when you start, listen and understand what's going on, and that's a better approach. And so I think I'm still doing that. I'm glad that you're going out and reaching out for the voice of women, both in general and sitting sessions. I'd like to see a really broad-based survey. Hope you can find somebody good that can help on the research side of this, because I think that's extremely important. Even if it's not original, I mean, it doesn't have to be original research. It just needs to be book and help us find what's out there that's relevant, be able to use that in terms of helping to develop policies that are data driven and the kinds of things that we know can move needle. And that's where data and research, applied research, I think, kind of really comes in here. So I'm looking forward to that part of it. And we have, you know, I'm thinking about, and, you know, as everybody's talking about what's happened with the pandemic and the impact on women and how do we approach that? I mean, all of us probably are all still engaged, but there are other women that this has been a struggle for. And I don't pretend to know, you know, how to really focus on that, but I'd love to have somebody who's actually doing a little bit of research, really understanding what are the barriers and the obstacles and what do women perceive as needing in order to help them reconnect and reengage and be able, again, to do it from a kind of data-driven approach that allows us to say, well, what could work and what could make a difference here? Women are incredibly important part just from the economy side. They are an incredibly important part of our workforce, not only now, but in the future. And I think we have to think through carefully how to build the right kinds of approaches and strategies to do that, that fits within the kind of values of Utah. So those are a few, probably more than you wanted, but
they're
going on in my head.
Thank you.
If I could add something there, just Senator Milner happens to be the only woman in her caucus, and also she's a minority, the majority whip.
You mean to take your job, Liz?
Yeah, you can take my job. But she's been very instrumental in helping get to a, she has a tough role, not only in her position as a senator and in her leadership position within her own, the Senate, but also, we rely heavily on her to bring some issues that sometimes are, required a different framework when explaining. And Senator Milner has become that voice for many of us that are coming with different approaches and different ideas. So having her in our commission, I don't know that they had any other options. Senator Milner being the only woman in the majority, but she's wonderful and she's very busy. So I know, I connect with her and we've talked about the commission offside, when we see each other and I just appreciate her time. She was very helpful during this session and in her new role, carrying a lot of just bills. And the last 3 days, she probably was going 120 miles an hour.
I am getting tennis shoes next year.
Yeah, so, I'm sure you've seen the trend of, I always argue with my husband because they all now have these tennis shoes. They're semi-heavy. But there are tennis shoes.
I'm joining. I'm rolling my heels.
And Sarah Milner has committed herself to being tennis shoes for the last couple of days of the session, which I may follow her.
The last three or four days.
It's because I don't think you ever sat down the last 3 days of the session. So, 14-hour day standing up and walking from the House to the Senate certainly was the workout for the whole week for her. It is an interesting position where she is. I don't think she thinks too much about it or talks about it, but from the outside, as we bring some issues to her attention, she is in a way the only voice that is helping us put some issues across, the majority in the Senate. So I just want to thank her for that. And we are super lucky that she is with us. And so thank you, Senator Milner, for that. And I know she was very kind to let me know at the end of the session that we will work together on the children's bill, right? So, again, pieces that affect not only obviously women, but families. And I know she's committed to that. So I just want to thank her for that. And I see Dr. Mattson is here. Welcome, Dr. Mattson.
Good to see you. I know some of you quite well and some of you I know a little bit, but hope one of these days to know you quite well when the pandemic is over.
Absolutely.
I do miss, I used to give hugs to a lot of people in the day, but I wonder if we'll ever get back to that totally.
Yeah, we will. And we
plan to.
13% of our population has been fully vaccinated. Another 8 are in their first part of the vaccination. So we're getting there and it's going to get better. So thank you, Dr. Mattson. We were waiting for you, so if you're ready, you can take it away on your presentation. It's always a pleasure to have you
join us
with your data and information. And I know there's been some projects you're going to be working on, and the state legislature just allocated funding precisely for one of them. So it was a top priority for our caucus, so we are a little bit aware. So looking forward to hearing from you. And with that, I'll pass the time to Dr. Mattson. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much. And just so you know about that funding, that was very needed funding. I'll be hiring two. I had an assistant director before, and then going to USU, I did not. And so it's been me and one full-time and two students. And then I have 21 research teams, mostly volunteers, and probably 50 different people I'm trying to manage. So the move and the opened the door to work with Extension and statewide campuses, but work in partnership with the League of Utah, League of Cities and Towns, the city and county managers. I mean, everything is unleashing, you know, the whole last few years. You know, there's just more energy around it, so way more requests. So I will be doing two hires as soon as my dean will give me the go-ahead. I found some bridge funding to get me through. Full-time associate director who will run partnerships and different things, but also manage a lot of the research teams. I'm just letting them drop right now. I started at 3 this morning. I can only do so much myself. But, and then the second, I'm super excited, and that will be a statewide outreach coordinator that will work heavily through all the extension offices. But then I've had so many municipalities and counties reach out and want to partner, and I just can't keep track of them myself. So really getting into support and partnerships and collaborations with cities, towns, businesses in different parts of the state. Also, I have a real good connection to the K-12 system, the principals, we're trying to get every place, right? And thank heavens Anne Marie is there to do the small businesses and entrepreneurship. So I love it. I love it. And, and then we have some one-time funding that will go for curriculum development, also some special outreach to new partnerships and efforts with multicultural groups, specifically with women, and some other research as well. So that's a little report on. I've already got like every penny spent, so hopefully. I think there'll be a lot of people that are interested in the two positions. I know quite a few actually that are. So that's a little background there. But today I was asked to, I'm really going to make this interactive, and this is why. Well, first of all, interactive is good, right? But second, the data that I'm going to share some introduction to the survey, but the data that I have, I took a quick look at a rough thing last week where we have so much data, I'll tell you about it. But the draft of the first brief that will be released on April 6th, I have two men that are statisticians that have run it and done the draft, but I just started working with it at 3 a.m. this morning because we've got to turn it around and get it to editors. So I do not have that stuff on slides because it's so new and I've been speaking. This is my third speech today. And I just got out of a great meeting with Jan. Is it Hemet or Hermit? I forget. Probably not Hermit. Hemet, Elizabeth, I see your mouth moving, but I don't hear anything. Hemet?
Emerge.
Okay,
Dan.
Yes,
Dan.
He and I and Nubia, Pena, and Jennifer Napier Pierce. So the three of us, not Dan, are really the leadership team that are working on the 500-day roadmap for equality and equity. But we met with Dan, and he's really, you know, going to go to town on different things in GOED and some great conversations there. So that's the meeting I was just out of. So let me shift and go to what I was actually asked to talk about today. And that is the study. And you get a little sneak peek of some things. But I will ask you to really do some thinking during what I'm talking about here, because what we're planning, I have three teams actually working now. This study was so large. So three different teams. One is a stats team. One, and we had 3,000, I have the numbers on that I'll give you, but like 3,600 responses. And of the qualitative questions, which were clear at the end, this was a big survey. The qualitative responses, I think 2,744. So we have, I think this will be one of the biggest studies there is. So we expect, if everything goes well and I can get my support, that we will have our first one hit April 6th. That should work because I'm doing some work today. But then the next month, we will have just a little segment of the qualitative research in early May. And then in June, we'll have another quantitative. And then in July, a qualitative. Do you see where I'm going? So I see at least 6 months of, and maybe more. There is so much good data. Now, what I would love to have you do, I'm going to show you a couple things, but what I wanted to start with was to give you a couple of slides on what we, the main things we collected, right? To just the questions. But then have you, after we kind of wrestle through some, what connections, what correlations, what relationships, what are really the questions that come to mind that you say, wait, we really need to know this, because there's hundreds of questions and types of data we can run. So whatever is most meaningful to you, we can put that on our next quantitative brief. Is that making sense? So let me go ahead and I started getting some slides together, but then I realized I wasn't going to, but I've got a few slides for you. But so it's going to be very informal today. So let me share my screen and give you a few things. Okay, so you know, got an official title here. There we go. And I left one of my slides I used for something the other day. People have left the workplaces in droves. This is nationally and still considering it, but this one. Although pink is often viewed as a pretty color, the pink recession is definitely not pretty. Okay, just wanted to leave you with that. But we're trying to dig into, there's lots of national data presented on that, and I don't want to do that today. I want to get right down to Utah women today. But just wanted to, first of all, just kind of tell you what we collected. So I'm going to give you some slides on demographics, and then I just have, I'm not going to give you all the questions, but I'm going to give you, after we do some demographics, just the chunks of things that we are looking at you. So demographics, again, we can run endless statistics on the data we pulled in. That's how much and how complex of data we asked for. Figured if we were going to do it, we got to do it right and get all the good data. So, of course, age, educational level, race, ethnicity, marital status. We did household income for 2 years. What was it in 2019? So we could track that. We didn't do all counties, but we did some counties and then groups of counties, especially in rural Utah. And then we got data on like what level of position, right? Frontline to executive. Then how many hours worked pre-pandemic and then currently, and the data was collected all through January. So that's, just think about where we were in January. We're in March now, but and then the physical workspace. And actually there's some elements of that we're hitting in the first brief. Our briefs are only like 6 pages. So we have to pick and choose. And how many people live with you of various age groups? This one we put in halfway through the data collection. So I didn't have that in the initial one, but when I brought in the two statisticians from the Huntsman School, they said, let's just pop it in, even if, and so we can run some data. We should have had that in our first one. And then we had just a yes and no question that we added halfway through too, adjustment to, did you adjust, you know, to help children online? We had some other questions getting to that as well. So those are some of the big demographics. And I don't want to read through all of this page, but I just wanted you to see. So we asked a question, how would you best describe your employment status during a typical week prior to March, right? Did you, you know, work for someone else? Did you freelance, you know, family business? You're retired, like you're just working and doing education. So we gave them lots of options. And with most of these, we had an other too, so we could go back and code. So that was the employment status. And then here's the question here. If you are not currently working for pay, or if you had stopped working at any time after March, what was your main reason for doing so? So we have lots of options, or they could choose a couple things. We just have a lot of different options. And then we had an other two. And then we also had a question about which of the following best applies. So did you leave the workforce? Did you take a leave of absence? You know, we're getting at some of the same things, but we had very intentional reasons. And this is, I wanted to say one thing that I forgot to say initially, and that is that we went through every piece of literature we could find when we started this and pulled off some of the questions from existing instruments, like the household, now I'm forgetting what it, the household pulse. Does anyone remember what that is? The house. Is it like a pulse? Is it a census one? I can't remember which it's from a government agency. But, and then we contacted McKinsey. They did a report. Catalyst did a report. So we tried to bring in questions that we could, that were already validated. And then I really came up with, and then had about five other people look and give me some good feedback on the other questions. So just so you know what we're, you know, it just didn't make up all the questions. So, okay. So those are really more of, even though some of them aren't totally demographic, in our initial sections, you can see there's a lot of different things there. And then for our core sections, I just have two slides for this. We had a set of questions. I think six or seven. And just so you know as well, that not all, but most of them are on a scale. Well, a lot of them are on a scale from 1 to 7. So 1 being totally disagree, strongly disagree, I think is the technical, to 7, which is strongly agree. So we had a group of probably 6 or 7 questions on basic needs. Their housing, food, access, their concern, really, their worry about housing, food, access to computers in general, and then fast, you know, reliable internet for jobs, for work, for homeschooling, for homework, all of that. So we had that section. So I think we hit a couple of these in our brief that we're doing right now, but there's going to be a lot more we could do with that. Income concerns. Are you worried now? Do you believe you're going to be okay in the next year, in 5 years? Are you worrying about losing a job, difficulty paying for expenses and so forth? So we have a whole area of income. And then we measured physical and mental health and safety. So we had just one question on their concern about, and we actually will have a little paragraph in this first brief about some elements of domestic violence. Of course, we could run that item against all kinds of different demographics. but do you feel like you've declined in your physical health, in your mental health? Are you worried about other people's physical and mental health and then domestic violence, like I mentioned? We had a number of education questions, and that those are things like, you know, because of the pandemic, do I need more school? Do I need more training? Do you think I need a certification? Do you see opportunities in Utah to actually get more education or training? Do you actually see those opportunities? Are you more motivated to explore that? And then someone at my house has discontinued their education. And if you were a current student, what actions did you take because of the pandemic? I was very adamant to put in a scale of validated questions, 6 questions on hope. So, like, how high is their hope? And we actually have run that for this first one. And then the last slide, I know that, well, actually I have some open-ended questions. We did get into the home responsibilities, childcare, caregiving, household chores, sharing responsibilities with spouse or partner. We have questions in 2 different places about burnout, exhaustion, struggle at home. Do you feel more burned out than you did a year ago? Workplace environment and concerns, like considered leaving. Are you more productive now or less? Are you worried about being judged because of your kids running around at home? Are you comfortable sharing your work-life challenges? Are you worried about performance or reviews? Do you have confidence in your company that your company is doing the right things? Is your company inclusive and still being inclusive, or is that going away, or is it moving forward? And then some gender equity things. And then we had a list of your biggest challenges ranked. Many of these things are there. And then 20 different policies and practices that their organizations could take, and did their organizations take them? And then these are our open-ended questions. They're meaty. How has the pandemic impacted your work experience? Okay, so that's different, right? And then if you look at 2, same question, but your career advancement. So how has it affected general work? And now how has it, do you see, and how would that work in your actual career advancement? There's literature to show that there's some issues with that. And then what benefits? We have people pushing us on that. Like, are there any benefits during the pandemic? And then some other thoughts. You know, as some of you are writing down lots of different things, I am wondering if you promise not to share it, don't distribute around, if it might be good for this group if I sent you my Word document. So you can actually look. Would that be better, Karen? You're nodding. You're like, too many things. Too many. You can get a little bit of a taste of the extensive nature of this research, right? So I'm happy to send you, well, I'll do it right at the end if you remind me. I can pop it in, or I can send it to, you know, somebody, you know. Sarah. Okay. I was like, Sarah, I think, where is she? Oh, she's down on my bottom row. To send to the group. Yeah, just don't distribute it all over the place. But I think there's so much. It's like a fire hose I just gave you. But if you look and take some time to think about it, maybe you'll see some interesting. I wonder this. I mean, what are the questions that pop up in your mind as you look at what we could run? And what I'd love to do is really support what this group would want, you know, and put those in our next report. Elizabeth.
I was wondering, when I was watching those questions, if those are going to reflect the amount of concern, the kinds of concerns that women bring into their jobs. Because I know when we talk about things like parental leave, mm-hmm. one of the issues there is that when women come back to work and they haven't had sufficient time with new children, they bring all of the concerns about their kids and the management of their households with the new child. They bring all of that to work, and it's recognized among their coworkers that that's what's going on. I mean, that's kind of hard to get data on except in a survey like this. So it makes me wonder if you see part of the survey addressing the issue of how much of the load from home comes to work or affects work, but it's connected with other people and other responsibilities.
I think there'll be some of that.
Okay.
And is Sarah, are you taking notes at all? I know you're recording this.
Mahal is taking notes.
Okay, great. Mahal, I would appreciate, because I'm going to have a rough time multitasking and taking notes for myself, but mm-hmm. especially the questions, what Elizabeth just brought up, and you know what, I'm calling you all by your first names. I'm sorry. You know, I that's just happening today. I've had a long day. I can't think of Senator Milner. No, I did right there. I got it right. So, okay. So excuse my informality. There we go.
Always. You can do that always.
Okay. So yeah, I would love what I was saying, Elizabeth, is I think some of the questions will get to that, but my hope is that our qualitative, and I've got 6 people doing qualitative analysis. That's how much data we have. And it's just so much, it's crazy. It's just out of control so much. But down the road, we can really dig down into areas that we want to know more about and really, and with some of this new funding, you know, I can get really good qualitative researchers hired even later, like even in July or August, because we'll have this data and to get down. Any of you done qualitative analysis before? There are layers and layers and layers to get down to. It's not an easy, like, let's just see the themes. But when you do it like I do it, it's an academic approach where you really go down and let the themes emerge in ways that take a little bit more time. I mean, I move it through, but it still takes more time to really get to that. So now what I was thinking, dang, Anne, we're just getting to some good stuff. Dang. Oh, well.
Want your good stuff. So.
Well, the actual report will be, I think, 2 weeks from today. So we're wrestling through some stuff. But what I'm going to do is actually just pull up the report that I have. And it's messy. I'm going to tell you, I have sent it back and forth in my breaks today to my two professors from my that I haven't known very very long, but they stepped it up to be part of the team. They're from the Huntsman School, and I just needed some statisticians that knew what they were doing. I can do the basics, but this is big stuff. So what I thought would be that I would just go through some of the tables, and like I said, there's red, so I'm a little embarrassed, but not too. You know, you get who I am. I can do what I can do, and you're all like just happy to get what I can give, right? So here we go. I'm going to see some of you. So, okay, and before you drop off, let me put this one up because, Anne, I know you just love the healthcare field and, you know, mental health, but I thought this table, see, it's messy, but it is what it is. I thought this one was fascinating, so I'm jumping to something. Do you need it bigger, Elizabeth? You're
no.
Looking in. Am I good? Can you see that a little bit?
Yes.
So look at this. This is, like, interesting. So this is the work location, and these are means, and it's a 7-point scale. So one, again, is strongly disagree, and seven is strongly agree. So seven would be, I agree that my mental health has declined. Okay. People who worked on site, so not at home or not a mix, you know, at home both now and now at home full time, now a mix. The people that actually worked on site had less decline. Think about that. They had less mental health decline. They perceived. So people that were working really at home, they're probably juggling those kids, feeling isolation, you know. So that was a surprise to me. Some of you are nodding, but I mean, does that not surprise you a little bit? No, that surprised me. Okay.
This reflects what I've heard, but it's been anecdotal. So I've had conversations with people in my neighborhood, but these are numbers that yep. absolutely reflect the conversations that I've had. And and again, numbers are so helpful when we're trying to point, you know, because they make things more believable for many people.
So look at this column, Elizabeth. Okay, 7-point scale, burned out. Look at that. And whether it's pretty much equal. And I have some tables in just a minute. I know Anne will have to leave by counties, though, by counties and areas that might be interesting. So we have a couple of different burnout scales. This one is one. The other one has lower numbers, but I think it's interesting. So burnout versus exhaustion. Look at that. So the highest in exhaustion, and these are pretty, this is almost six. So six is agree. Again, five is somewhat agree, six is agree, seven is strongly agree. I just thought this was interesting that you would, that we have this data that, and I just think it was interesting. So I thought Anne would appreciate that before she dropped off. Now this is not, let me switch it down to the next. So there we go. This is not a surprise, but we have data, and this is your household income, right? And how much you're worrying about food and housing and money. So this makes sense, 80%, and all the way to, so one point that I need to make about this, you know, it goes down lower. But even the people in higher incomes, there's a good chunk of people at this 150K to almost 200K, you know, that are still very worried about money, not necessarily food, not necessarily housing, but some. But again, money, you know, the lower incomes, significant worry, significant stress. This is not a surprise, but we have numbers on this now. And so, one thing I did want to mention is that, let me pull it up here. We ended up, so I worked, me and about five people worked super hard. Oh my gosh, so hard to try and get diverse race, income levels, everything. We pounded the pavement. We worked with everybody we could, like hundreds, and we still have, we were able to get a mix, but still so many highly educated people. But you can see the age. Can you see that okay? I know it's, do you want a little bit bigger, maybe? Maybe one more bigger? We've got a good mix of age. Do you see that? If you just glance, pretty good mix of age. Lots of married folks. Look at this, though. Lots of more educated folks. 36% bachelor's degrees, almost 40% graduate degrees. Still, we worked hard to get this, some college, high school, even the numbers that we have. And because the sample size is so large, you can even with smaller numbers, they're big enough that we can get some statistical things. But it would have been better, but we did the best we could. We worked so hard, and there were people in the Hispanic community that worked hard to get us our numbers for the Hispanics. That was our biggest group. And then we did get some more Asians. I was trying to get at least 50 to 75 in each of the different race and ethnicity groups. So we did, you know, and then I put this number of children living at home in later. So this makes sense. But we did get enough mix on number of children that were in the house. Income level, of course, we got less. I even tried to get the, Scott Howell, if you know him, to help us get more homeless. I don't think we got too many homeless, but we worked really hard to try to do that. But we did still get enough because it's such a large to be able to run some statistics. But of course we have, you know, 23%, 10%, you know, in these higher elements, but we did get a mix here. So many, I mean, Salt Lake County and the county I presented to the economic developers already, last week, of Salt Lake County, and they're very much want to get county level reports on this, but we did get so many thousand, you know, well over 1,000, just from Salt Lake County. Utah was the next, you know, Box Elder, that whole, the North, Davis County. There's some interesting things with the Northern Utah and Davis County. I'll show you in a minute. Tooele was the one that we got the least, and we really tried to get more. But you can see how we grouped these together. So many in education, but still a bunch of nonprofit, government, healthcare, professional services over here. Yeah, I would have, you know, these are the people that were probably stressed and just didn't want to take the survey. But we got enough to run some statistics in these lower areas. And then we did get a lot of frontline workers. Look at that. And then team leads, professional, kind of, you know, we have a good mix of that. So that's good information for you to know. So let me see. Is this interesting? Are you finding this interesting? Okay, Anne Marie, I'm looking at you. We're going to go to the entrepreneurship section, actually. I'll move over to that. Okay, Anne Marie, I'm talking to you now. So what we did was really pull out people that said that they were entrepreneurs, but they employed others, or they were just self-employed. Or they were not an entrepreneur. They just worked for a company. So regularly worried about money. We had a few questions for that. So four, that's about neutral. So interestingly, that's like neutral, not, you know, that's actually better than I was thinking. The self-employed, wait. They're regularly worried about money. So that is about, yeah, neutral. Self-employed, a little bit more worried about money. And if you work for a company, somewhat worried, but more in the somewhat disagree.
Question. So this is the average.
Yeah,
right?
This is the mean.
The mean. Oh, okay. That's what I was wondering about. Okay, then that's even better. Good.
Yeah, so it's the mean. So four is neutral. So they expect job or income loss in the next months. If you employ yourself, but still that's neutral. So I think that's interesting. And then work for another company, but this was January, you're not looking for a job, you know, not expecting. More burned out than before the pandemic. Employ others is the most burned out. then work for a company, then they're pretty close though. But that's significant again. That burnout is quite significant, right? Exhausted. You can see they're pretty, you know, it's close to just, yes, I am burned out. You're seeing more of employ yourself. And that makes sense, right, Anne-Marie? That kind of makes sense. Struggling with that, you really see these hires struggling with the work-life balance. Let me get over so I can see more of you in one screen. There are a lot of ways around a problem. So that came from a hope thing. You can see that, yeah, I mean, we're seeing some options in all of those areas. If I'm in a jam, could I think of a way out? A little bit lower, you know, some hope there. Anyway, that was, we have a lot more. Oh, there's one more. Believe they will be financially stable over when the pandemic is over. So that is between somewhat agree to agree. So there's some good hope here. Those are some questions within hope. Anne-Marie, there's going to be a lot of other things that you'd probably be interested in running, but that's all we have in this particular thing. But I thought I would switch now over to, we have a couple of tables here. Now you're going to have to think about this for a minute. I've got to switch out. Hold on. Let me get over here. Well, you'll just have to look. Here it is right here. So this is by area of the state. Now, don't worry about these two numbers. I'm working with a statistician. They're not used to doing reports like this, so they're doing some statistical things. But I'll just tell you how to read it, and we're going to fix this. So this is by area of the state. And then these three are means again for the 7-point scale. All right? And these are, so let me just start here. Let me start with hope. So again, I have 6 items, and they are all together supposed to measure hope on a scale of 1 to 7. So this is hope, and you see that actually the most, so it's a mean, this is actually pretty good. It's like somewhat agree, I'm hopeful, right? So let me see, who is, we've got, I thought there was one, maybe they corrected the data. There's a few that are just more hopeful than others. Washington County is high hope. They're not a huge difference. Summit Wasatch, some of the highest. Daggett, Duchesne. Do you see how I'm reading this? So generally speaking, almost a somewhat agree that there's some hope out there. So not like, the world's problems are all solved, but some of that. Interestingly, look at this one, money concern. The mean is 2.6. I'll fix that since I'm there. Tooele, is that the highest? No. Carbon, Emory, Grand, and San Juan are the highest, but still just somewhat. So these are, I was actually surprised. These are a little bit lower numbers than I would have thought, but help me, is I think Carbon's the most, and then Tooele, Daggett, you know, are the most concerned. Which counties are the least? Davis? So, I switched. Money concern. And then here's some other burnout things, but you can see them by county. I don't think we, you know, you'll be able to see these more when you get the reports. And then over here, we actually have income change. So I know these numbers don't make sense to you right now, but if it's positive, these are positive. So that means that they actually made more money in 2020 than they did in 2019. So are you following this? Have I lost you yet? So, okay. Are you still there? Okay, I can see a few of you. So you can see Look at that. I wonder what happened there to this part. Because that's, they're the, are they the highest? Lacaine, iron went up. Carbon, emery, significantly down. I know these numbers don't make sense, but you can see the negative. Some Washington County. And then you can see the negative and positive on hours change. Like, did they work more? Did they work less? So we also, if you look at the same scale, we also ran it by industry. Now look at this. Income change negative. Manufacturing is the top that they lost income. Second, food services. That makes sense, right? Third, hospitality. That makes sense with what we know. Construction, fourth. That surprises me because construction has kept going the whole time, hasn't it? Yeah, you're welcome to turn on your mics and come in anytime. I'll do this and then we could talk for a minute if you have specific questions. Healthcare, but then you start like going the other direction where you have positive income and look at trade, transportation, utilities, and nonprofit community. That one's interesting. Like the nonprofit and the community actually are making more money. Maybe it's because they're working more. I don't know.
I mean, for our organization, we receive CARES Act funds to help.
Oh.
So on the other end, we receive money so that we could help others.
That may be part of it. Sales, you know, education. I think that's fascinating.
It's probably CARES Act. I would just add, I mean, $700 million injection of money, that's a chunk of money. And a lot of it is going to be nonprofit related, so I think that's
probably. That makes sense. Thank you. Totally makes sense.
Also, I'll jump in. I work with nonprofits, and in terms of CARES money, that paid for overtime because for homeless, for example, being able to work in those environments actually was hazard pay. So there was an increase in salaries, and those are traditionally women-filled positions.
Oh, perfect background. I need to run by this group when I, like, that doesn't make sense to me. But look at the burnout that the nonprofit community are actually a little bit higher. Well, food services is. So one of the higher, you know.
I'm surprised about hospitality and tourism. I would have thought that it would be just as high as food service or more. I'm a little surprised by that.
Yeah. Yeah, that they had to pick what industry they're in. So that is kind of surprising. But, you know, look at this HOPE one for food services. That's quite low. They're like, is it ever going to get back? But the money concern, is that interesting or what? That's good news. I mean, maybe we're doing stuff good in Utah. There is still money concerns. Okay. We know there are, but in this way that we're running the data, it is kind of interesting to look at.
Well, I mean, I think it has to do with the phenomenon of a pandemic, right? I mean, it's already alerting enough and people, I mean, it was pretty bad that the fact that you can sustain yourself and had a job, I think people are just counting that as a blessing, right? So
yeah,
look, I mean,
true.
And I think what we need to recognize, and if you, you know, look back into history, I mean, move all politics aside, I mean, injecting those type of funds to the economy really kept the economy moving.
That
will look back in history 20 years from now saying what we did wrong or right. And it's all federal money. I mean, you know, one of the biggest challenges for Utah, I mean, we went from a $17 billion budget to a $23 billion budget based on federal funds. And, you know, that created a structural imbalance for us as we worked the budget. I mean, like the nuances of having extra funds, right? Oh, I don't know what to do with all the money. It truly was, it will continue to be a structural imbalance for us for the next, at least another cycle. Because we have obviously more money coming in, up to $8 billion coming to the state of Utah. But I mean, clearly, no one is complaining, right?
Yeah.
It is a one-time approach, which is the hardest thing to recognize. And, you know, and it's a challenge because we can't, it's not sustainable. So we're now going to have probably 2-3 years from now. I'm interested to see your data. As you see now, probably people are going to be kind of like sad because we're not going to be able to sustain this influx of injection of money. So I'm curious from a historical part, right? I mean, if we think back to the Great Depression and what moved the economy was jobs, right? So you're describing kind of like the core of the workforce, but these families had to make really severe, I mean, those decisions that you're talking about, that description that you had at the beginning of your presentation is something that we can't forget because it's really the sacrifices that were made in the name of facing a pandemic. And we kind of like all did in our brains. We're like, hey, this is bad. It's bad in the whole world. Let's take it and survive. But of course, the fact that there are jobs and people can still provide some type of food to their families and shelter, we're kind of like saying, hey, there's light at the end of the tunnel. But it's going to be brutal. I mean, if we're going to look back to your point, I mean, that assessment of mental health and women having to quit their jobs and having to be the, you know, the teacher and the provider and everything. I mean, I can't imagine how women are going to get out of this mental health process years from now. We're going to kind of like look at the aftermath.
That's, you have made such interesting points. I was just saying real quick, something, you know, maybe those columns, that column, where was it? That column of not a high concern about money is because in January, maybe things had settled and maybe all this influx of funding and jobs were there. So maybe that's a good thing that they weren't, you know what I mean? That they were settled enough to feel like things are going to work out. Yeah,
I had two questions or thoughts, and you're probably going to already look at it this way, but I would be quite curious from the industry perspectives and sort of those measures of hope. So the difference between restaurants and tourism is kind of used to the boom and bust, right? And so maybe they're just more resilient, whereas restaurants have always, so I don't know if there's any way to look at that, but I think it would be interesting. And then my other thought is to be able to differentiate the income levels to the levels of hope as well. And I'm sure you're going to do that, but I just think that there's, yeah, and then one other thought is there were industries that were literally shut down. They were mandated to shut down. And so I wonder if that has anything to do with hope because you don't have that in your control, right? And so that locus of control is, of course, very much correlated to hope, right? Your ability to have autonomy. And so I that would be interesting. I know those are probably in depth and you may not be able to look at them, but pandemic.
We can look at them sometime.
Well, this pandemic was so different, right? Because, you know, when you have a recession, a great recession, you know, I know there's some, you know, like real estate in the last great recession, but this was different in that some women-owned like cosmetology and hairdressing and, you know, some of those were literally shut down. And so that would just be a curiosity.
I love that. And any of these would be great. I think I just have one or two. They didn't have much in terms of the race ethnicity in this one, but I pushed them back. So I have an email I can open and show you some numbers that we'll put in this. But let me show you this screen. So this is organizational support during the pandemic. So the top to the bottom, is bereavement counseling. You can see these are percentages. So the top, of course, is flexibility in work location, work hours, mental health counseling, a big drop there, but still 27%, increased sick leave, some companies, personal, well, you know, you can glance, increased family leave, 11%. And it would be interesting, it just came to my mind, wouldn't it be interesting to run these by industry? That one's the one that sticks out the most in that one. Emergency loans, not so much. Additional child care support, not so much down here. you know, this one's kind of interesting. You know, the companies were just jolted, you know, into this work at home. So I think that they didn't have a lot of policies and procedures and different things that oftentimes, like this, I did my dissertation 20 years ago on telecommuting and work and life stuff. And companies that did telecommuting, and this was when I was in Minnesota, and they were really big into teleworking back then, but they had very much all of this in place. And in Utah, you know, this has been such a, Utah's seriously been, when I moved here 18 years ago, and I had just really finished my dissertation and worked with Minnesota companies, it was like we were at least 15 years behind, at least, of any of the work-life policies, the flexibility. But just in 1 year, and still, even last year, I would say we were bottom in the one of the worst 10 states in terms of flexibility and family-friendly. But I think it's been embraced now, and maybe we're going to move to the top. So I thought that was interesting. And then let me open up the race. You didn't know you'd be looking at individual emails today. I don't know. Can you even see that at all?
Some people, Kara or Susan, I just wanted to remind you of about 4 minutes, and then our meeting is scheduled to be
okay.
Over, this so is my, we're kind of dropping off. Thanks.
Yeah, so I just wanted to show this, but you can see how many white people only here, 3,000, and we worked super hard. I worked in the Pacific Islander and just could not get, but we did get Hispanics, a good group of Hispanics, but you can see that, you know, generally speaking, white women have slightly lower numbers about worrying about finances, housing. I think the burnout, the American Indian are less burned out and black. But you can definitely see, you know, you see some of these numbers we've run, and we'll integrate that. The financial worry, you definitely see some significant numbers in women of color, more than white women. You can definitely see that, especially between Hispanic, some of these, and look at that in terms of housing worry, right? There's definitely some interesting things there. So, woo! Now, what other things? does anyone, and we're recording this, so I appreciate the note taking as well. But any other things, seriously, like what has come up that you think are really important statistics to run? Anne Marie.
I don't know this is so much a statistic to run, but I'm guessing because, you know, you're the researcher and I'm definitely not. Did people have suggestions of what could be done, or that's not something you asked, right? Like what would be something to be done to improve your stress or, you know, I don't know.
Well, we do have, we have lots of that data in other ways, but I expect we'll get some of that in the qualitative as well. So, but there's some good.
They wrote narratives, right?
Yes, and some of them wrote a lot. So
good. That's really good.
Yeah.
So I apologize. I was thinking, you know, women are the primary caregivers typically for not only children, but typically, you know, the parents and that sort of thing. And I don't know if you're already planning on looking at that, but I was thinking, you know, in terms of hope again, if there was a way to correlate, or if you have the data around caregiving to non-children, right? I think you're probably have robust around that. And my thought is because COVID, there were a lot of deaths. And again, they were restricted in some ways when people were in senior living. And it would be interesting to kind of see some of these nuances to the pandemic itself. Even though it's hitting women hard, I would be interested in, in that sort of perspective, because I think that would be across ethnicity, right? It could be across income levels, but they were parts of this pandemic that were so unique to any other recession type, even earthquake disasters, right? You can recover quicker. So it's just such a unique disaster, if you will. And I am wondering about some of those tweaks, especially in terms of hope and resilience. And again, some of those things you could control and you couldn't, things that you were made to do, even though you would have probably gladly gone to see your elderly adult, right? Like you wanted to keep them safe, but you probably would have risked yourself or, you know, those sorts of things. So
yeah, we can, I mean, down the road, this, I've never had such a big database set. This is huge. But down the road, any of those things that they clicked on, I left because of caregiving, I left because of childcare, we could wrestle with that and run various things. I just put the COVID survey instrument in the chat. So if you want to open that and pull it over, I know I gave you that fire hose right at the beginning. You're like, how do I keep track of everything Madsen just said? But yeah, that will help look at that. And even as we go along, like I said, we're probably going to be doing these. We could probably do 10 reports, just quantitative, if not more than that. So if things come up even, you know, especially, you know, probably in the next couple of weeks, you know, I can give that data to the researchers to run for their June report. But even down the road, we'll do another one probably. And so as things come up and you're like, I wonder, you know, I think we can make it happen. I'm hoping, especially with this funding as well, I can get someone to help really run and write county specific or region specific, kind of have a report, you know, like some of the national agencies, they said, here's for Utah, here's for Colorado, here's for this group. And we might be able to do one of those so the county or region areas would have their own. Oh my gosh, I didn't show you the Davis County. Davis County, what was that? Now I'm forgetting what it was, but it was so interesting. Northern Utah, I think it was just in a text. Northern Utah, it's coming back. Oh, here we go. When compared to regionally, Northern Utah had a greater percentage, 25%, versus other counties with just 13% of women who indicated they left the workforce because they were sick or afraid of getting sick. And Davis County had a higher percentage, 45%, versus the average of 39, who indicated they left because their employer was impacted or closed due to pandemic restrictions. Is that kind of interesting?
I think it's interesting because I think I don't know the stats, but my assumption that's uneducated is that aren't there a little bit more wealthy people in Davis County? And wouldn't they be able to, I don't know. I live in Bountiful and I just found out that so many women around me don't even work or that they don't have to. But then the stats show that they were in industries where they were infected. So that doesn't match up to me. I don't know.
I don't understand that either, but I thought it was just fascinating, that worry. And maybe it was all me because I have been really concerned about getting.
Having lived and worked in Weber Davis,
yeah.
I wouldn't say they're more affluent, right? Bountiful, I think, is certainly more so, but they're a bedroom community. So I think you have a lot of double income. And I would say that probably because of the industries that are traditionally employing women, because there's a lot of manufacturing and composite manufacturing, which is traditional male, that the women who are dropping out are probably working in more traditional, like at restaurants and maybe doing more of a, you know, hospitality or cosmetology or right there, whether it's public interfacing. So your schools are large employers, your lagoon amusement park is a large employer, although that's, you know, not necessarily, but if you just think of it, they're more of a bedroom community with more middle class families, not more affluent. And so you don't really have the industry. So I would say that the very first thing I would do is look at it by industry, if you can take a look at that, because I think that'll be way more telling for you when you're looking through those.
I just thought it was fascinating. I'm like, yeah. Sarah.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask, Mahal actually asked me this question. You're not intending for that to be public, right? That draft, that's just for our purposes, and we're not sharing that as part of the public record.
The
report that you linked to, your survey.
Oh, the survey, yeah. Thank you for asking. Yeah, no, let's, for now, yeah, I just don't get it all out. Yeah, I just think
it would be like to clean it up a little first. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's fine for people just here so you can give me feedback on what you want to do, but not necessarily the public. Thank you for clarifying that. Anyway, I hope that this has been kind of interesting, even though it's just front, cutting edge. What is the word, like? Just barely coming across. But the two stats guys, they have like spreadsheets of like 50. Like, what do you want? Tell us what you want. What do you want us to run? And the reason they did the ones they did is, and I was in the middle of stuff and I couldn't even think deeply. I'm like, burnout. why people left the workplace, a little bit about entrepreneurship. I could picture Anne Marie. I was like, Anne Marie will kill me if I don't do anything with that. Anne Marie, off question. Where, Hiram? Hiram, Utah?
Yeah, Hiram.
My son and my daughter-in-law just bought property and are building a house in Hiram, Utah.
That is me. Oh, that's so great.
Probably in your neighborhood.
Yeah, Susan is just mentioning I got permission to be a permanent remote worker from the Salt Lake Chamber because I have my dream job, but I am sacrificing my dream life because I want to live in a small town again. So they said yes, and I'm building a home in Hiram, Utah, just south of Logan, and I'll come into to Salt Lake when I need to for meetings like this, but I'll get to live in a small town again, and I'm so excited.
But I didn't know. I probably wasn't supposed to bring that up.
No, it's not a secret. It's great.
But they just told me that they were going to do that. And I'm like, hey, I have a friend up there. He's moving up there. Anyway, again, you know, send me or we can find a time to chat if you have some ideas or whatever. But would love feedback, seriously, to help us think through what's next. For the next one, and we'll have it ready and released on April 6th this round, but I think we could run reports forever. So
well, we want to thank you very much for coming and presenting, and I know you had to squeeze us in between your super busy schedule, so really want just to thank you very, very much again for coming and presenting that information and kind of giving us insights. And definitely if you have questions, I think with anyone in the group or if you want the commission to, you know, certainly send questions our way as well. We'd love to contribute in any way that we can. So just a big thank you.
Well, thank you. Even your insights from just a few of the things we talked about were very helpful. Very helpful. Good. So thanks to all. Bye-bye.
And everyone else, we will adjourn. So thank you all for being here. And Anne-Marie, I had a quick thought on the survey, and I don't know if we need to take it through the task force, but when Senator Milner was talking and then again when Dr. Madison and you asked her the question, I wonder if it would make any sense, and you can say no, but we only have 9 surveys done. I wonder if there would be a spot for a question at the end to ask what would help you reengage in the workforce? Like if you're not engaged, right, like if you lost your job or something like that, I wonder if there would be one little piece where we could actually ask about that reengagement piece. So just kind of food for thought when you're looking at the survey, and that might be really worthwhile. It might be interesting. Yes, ma'am.
I was just going to say, if you guys have any changes, will you just let Mahal know? She'll have to work with Dee to get access to the survey, and we can make whatever changes that you want. And I do have to go. I apologize. I've got kind of an HR emergency going on.
No worries. Thank you.
So, Mahal, let Mahal know so she can stop recording when we're done.
Okay.
You have that control on your bottom of your screen, Mahal. Stop recording. Just checking.
We can stop recording now.
Okay. Are we? Okay.
Yeah, we're done.